let's lock up the Oregon fuel injection hotline after missing last week because I was entertaining my dad in from Jersey. Our Wednesday leadoff man is back. He's the columnist for USA Today, keeping us all wired into college football. See what he's up to in the red section of the paper online, usatoday.com. Follow on Twitter, the handle at George Schroeder. George, a very good Wednesday to you. How are things in the Big Apple?
Things are good. Things are cold, but good.
I know that the National Football Foundation had their Hall of Fame dinner this week. I mean, guys like Charles Woodson, Mack Brown, Ed Reed. So you're in New York. What is your Midtown mission this week?
Oh, I was at the National Football Foundation dinner, but not necessarily because of the Hall of Fame. It was more because of the people who are current officials, conference commissioners, athletic directors, coaches, people in and around the game all gather for that dinner. And so it's like a two-day meet and greet fest. And then, you know, at the same time, you've got coaching searches, although not as many this year, going on, and a lot of them happening in New York. You got that. And then today and tomorrow every year on the Tuesday and Wednesday and Thursday after the dinner, you have in what's called an intercollegiate athletics forum put on by Sports Business Journal. And so today I interviewed Bob Bowlesby, the Big 12 commissioner, for that. So there's just always sort of news that can potentially be made in New York City about college football or college sports this week.
Nice. Fun. You know, I mentioned Mack Brown, who, of course, took over North Carolina in the late 80s when they were terrible. His last 2 years, the Heels were top 10. Then, of course, he took the Texas job and, you know, had all that success, won the BCS title, been out of coaching since 2013. What did you make of his getting the North Carolina gig after the Tar Heels fired Larry Fedora after going 2-9?
Weird. That'd be the first thing. And I'm not convinced they make the move with Larry Fedora unless they have Mack Brown sort of ready in the fold. But I'll tell you this, it's an odd move. You know, the last time any of us saw Mack Brown was Oregon putting the Texas program out of its misery in that Alamo Bowl, right?
So yep.
You know, he looked tired at that time at 62. Now he's 67 and is going to try again. And we'll see what his staff is like, and we'll see how he can get it done.
Woof, kind of surprised me. Speaking of departed coaches, I was talking with our colleague Austin Meek yesterday. He covered Bill Snyder at Kansas State, another one who retired. And I got to tell you, all I ever knew of K-State living back east was every year in Sports Illustrated, they listed them on their bottom five. When you think of the resurrection of that program and what he built Wildcat football into, kind of what pops into your mind?
Oh, I think just you can't really describe how bad it was when he got there in the late 80s. I mean, you know, Sports Illustrated called it futility U, and I don't think there was any really hyperbole in that. It was terrible. And he turned it into something different than it had ever been. They became a credible, maybe not quite a top 25 program perennially, but something approaching that, a perennial winner, a perennial bowl team. And I think it's probably the best coaching job in the history of college football, quite frankly. So that's his legacy, which I think was at risk of being damaged irreparably if he had tried to hang around. I believe he was nudged out. You can just sort of read between the lines here, and it feels like he was. You know, he's 79. He's going to turn 80 next fall, and I saw him here in New York, didn't get a chance to talk with him, but, you know, it's a little sad how it ended, but I don't think that should tarnish what he accomplished.
Talking with George Schroeder, USA Today, another relatively high-profile coach, Urban Meyer, announced he's leaving after the Rose Bowl. So when you think about the problems that have surrounded his program, the three-game suspension, the Big Ten media performance, the physical ailments, how would you describe, I guess, your level of surprise that he announced he's walking away earlier this week?
I would call myself startled when the actual news happened, but not surprised or shocked that he walked away. You've been hearing those things all year long from people who cover the program, people in and around Ohio State, that they thought this felt like it was the end for him one way or another. And I guess maybe I had a little bit of a pause after they beat Michigan and beat Northwestern, but because he looked like he was a little rejuvenated at that point. But I think the die had already been cast. And given sort of the medical issue that he chose to make public in late October or early November, he told us all about the cyst on his brain. I wasn't surprised at all, I guess, other than just it was startling to actually get the news, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I know what you mean. If somebody told you during the year that he's going to end up walking away, you'd have been like, I buy that. But then as the year went on, all of a sudden you're like, well, maybe not. That's kind of what was my read, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, and I think that's probably not what I was looking at. And, so suddenly you have Ohio State attempting to promote Ryan Day, the offensive coordinator. And obviously they got a kind of a semi-look at what he might be like as a head coach when he was for the first 3 games while Meyer was serving that suspension. We'll see how that works. But it's an awful big job. It's one of the top five or eight jobs in college football. Some people would make it the best job. And it's an awful big job to have to give to a guy who's never been the head coach before. We've seen that scenario play out 2 years ago, 18 months ago, when Bob Stoops stepped away and Oklahoma gave it to Lincoln Riley, another really big job given to a guy who's never been a head coach before. And that's worked out so far. Although, obviously, there's some decisions he's going to have to make about how to fix the defense. But the idea that two sort of top five, top eight jobs open and you just promote guys who've never coached before, been head coaches before, and both of them are going to be, stellar moves. It feels awful risky to me.
One of the things you wrote this week about Bob Stoops, obviously you mentioned the similarities, guys who won a bunch, each retired at a pretty young age for coaches, and each had their up-and-coming offensive coordinator promoted. So Bob Stoops, was he kind of in a mood to give advice, or what did he have to say about, I guess, in some ways, maybe Urban Meyer following his a semi-similar path into retirement?
Well, he noted that Urban's already taken a year off at one point. You remember, after he left Florida, citing health reasons, was out for a year, and the next thing you knew, he was back at Ohio State. And by the way, a lot of people kind of wonder if we haven't seen the last of Urban in this case. He's only 54.
Right.
But Bob Stoops basically said, have patience. It's going to be hard. If you've been wired to work like football coaches work, it's going to be very hard to suddenly give it all up.
I've heard a lot of people talking about, and of course, when a guy retires, we do the L word, the legacy word. And, inside Ohio State, that kind of bubble, all they're ever going to probably talk about is the winning and the national titles and beating Michigan all the time. And outside, the anti-Buckeye people or anti-Meyer people will talk about, how he handled the allegations and Zach Smith and Courtney Smith and, the way he conducted himself at Big Ten Media Day. But when people say it's one or the other, isn't that kind of nuts? In a few years, if he doesn't get back in coaching, when everybody talks about him, of course they're going to talk about everything, right?
Oh, yeah. But I think his legacy is definitely tarnished unless you're the most, unless you're a hard and fast Buckeye fan. It's definitely tarnished by how he left Florida and some of the things that came out later about the discipline issues and how he did or didn't handle them. And then the situation with Zach Smith and the allegations of domestic violence by his wife, Courtney Smith, that, he handled or mishandled over the last couple of years, and then obviously the scandal broke last summer. Those are going to be giant stains on his resume, frankly, and his legacy from here out, and they ought to be, because it's not just about winning football games. It's about, do you do the right thing? And especially when it comes to Urban Meyer, you're dealing with a guy who preaches all these sort of values, and then you see that it appears he's preached one thing and done another. And, look, a lot of people do that, obviously. It's almost felt sanctimonious at times from him, and then you find out that perhaps he's only talking a good game. That's going to be the way a lot of people remember him.
Yeah, I agree. A couple final thoughts for George Schroeder of USA Today. A couple times this year, you and I have talked about those October Heisman Awards, whether it's been Geno Smith or Leonard Fournette, and of course, Tua Tagovailoa this year. And while I absolutely agreed with the trio of finalists who've made it to New York, am I often thinking if the voters waited until this past Sunday morning, we might actually have kind of an outcome that is not etched in stone Saturday night?
Well, I think most of them probably did. Probably did have an outcome that maybe changed in the final weekend. And maybe that's too much, frankly, if it radically changed in the final weekend. But if you just look at there are three Heisman surveys I checked out this week, one of which is USA Today does one of its voters and those who work at Gannett newspapers, which obviously Gannett is, USA Today is a Gannett paper. And that one had been Tua Tagovailoa, but it had been closing, getting closer and closer with Kyler Murray. And this week, Kyler Murray is a clear leader. It's not even as close as it was when Tua was the guy. It's not like they went from Tua just ahead to Kyler just ahead. They went to Kyler far ahead. That's the survey. ESPN's polls its voters that work for ESPN, and I don't know what the results were the week before last in terms of how close it was, but it's flopped from Tua to Kyler too week. And then Athletic has flopped from Tua to Kyler as well. And the thing that's interesting about all of that is obviously we saw their performances on Saturday. There had been a sense that the race was tightening, such as the race is, I guess. And what's interesting is everybody had to have their votes in by Monday. And so if, in fact, those three surveys reflect how it really went down, then all of a sudden Kyler Murray won the Heisman on basically by changing people's minds in the last week. or they changed their minds about Tua on the last week, or both. I don't know what happened. I don't know that any of those or all of those polls are enough to be the right sample size. And you don't really know how other voters are thinking anyway. But it's definitely interesting.
Oh, I think so. And lastly, the SEC title game. You never know when great drama presents itself. But, quarterbacks, Kelly Bryant, Wilton Spate, they got dropped down the depth chart, left school. Jalen Hurts, after all he'd accomplished, stuck with Alabama. Tua tweaks his ankle, and Jalen leads them on two scoring drives, finishes the deal himself, and locks their spot up in the playoff. I mean, you always say how you're looking for a great story. How great was this for this game and what this young guy did with all the pressure in the world on?
Yeah, 11 months ago, same stadium, same opponent. Slightly higher stakes, national title versus the SEC championship, but there's a playoff berth at least on the line for one team anyway. Because I think if Alabama loses, a lot of people think they still get in, right?
But, right.
He loses his job to Tua Tagovailoa. We all know the story. And the next thing you know, Tua's not playing well, but he gets banged up and has to leave the game. And in comes Jalen Hurts and leads him to two touchdowns in the fourth quarter to win the game. If you tried to sell that script to Disney, let's do Miracle on Ice or something like that, or make up one out of nowhere, I think they would tell you it might be a little bit too corny and we're not going to believe it. But that's why we love sports, because those kinds of things actually do happen sometimes. And it was a terrific, terrific moment for Jalen Hurts. I don't care if you like Alabama or hate Alabama. You had to enjoy watching him sort of have kind of a, I don't know if the word is redemptive, but kind of a redemptive moment or a comeback moment that nobody would have ever expected to happen. Especially given that he didn't transfer away, could have. He still, by the way, he graduates this month, and he'll have 1 year of eligibility and be immediately eligible. But he didn't transfer away. He was sort of the good soldier, stuck with the team, and seemed to have accepted his role, even as he clearly had worked to get better. And that, so it was a pretty cool moment. My assumption is if Tua's ankle, which he had surgery on, is to go, that we're going to see Tua and Jalen Hurts goes right back into that sideline role. So it's kind of a one-night burst. What a great moment.
No, I actually found myself kind of pulling for him at the end and cheering when he took it in from the 15. It was absolutely awesome. Folks, he's George Schroeder, USA Today, usatoday.com online, on Twitter, at George Schroeder. Enjoy your time in my old stomping ground, and we wish you safe travels, and we look forward to seeing what we could chat about next week. Thanks a lot, George.
All right. Hey, thank you, guys.
All right, take it easy.